broadcasting live from the Encita Business Radio X studio in North Carolina, it's time for NC Tech Talk, where tech leaders come to tell their stories.
Welcome to NC Tech Talk, North Carolina's internet radio broadcast covering the tech sector. I'm Mark Montoro with the North Carolina Technology Association, or NCTA as we're affectionately known by our members, and your host for today's show. For those of you unfamiliar with NCTA, we are a nonprofit membership-driven association and the primary voice for the tech sector in North Carolina. We support economic growth through three initiatives: our executive engagement, which is our term for events; public affairs, where we lobby in front of state and federal government on behalf of the tech sector; and knowledge workforce, or workforce development, which is our initiative for helping companies find the talent they need and the job seekers find those companies that they want to work for next. If you want to learn more about us, you can visit our website at nctechnology.org. Our Twitter handle is at NCTA, and we have a company page on LinkedIn as well. We are also streaming updates and comments on this and future shows at our hashtag, which is NC Tech Talk on Twitter. We had over 500 attendees at State of Technology just last month, which was our flagship technology conference. One of the feature components was our startup showcase, and it was very well received. And we have two of our guests from companies that were a big part of that. Our first guest today is from TigerEye Security Sensors, who ended up winning the Startup Showcase Award for Best Presentation. I'd like to welcome Lynn Yanyo, who is the CEO of TigerEye Security Sensors. Thanks for joining us, Lynn.
Thanks, Mike. Glad to be here.
Yeah. And our other guest is Bobby Davis, who is a co-founder as well as the CTO for Coder Foundry. Coder Foundry sponsored the Startup Showcase and have a lot of great developments coming up that kind of go inside with our workforce development. So, Bobby, thanks for joining us as well.
Hey, thank you.
Bobby, we'll start with you. First, tell us a little bit about Coder Foundry, how it got started.
Well, Coder Foundry is basically a boot camp, and I'm involved in multiple startups in the tech arena. And one of the things that I noticed right away was when I was trying to find developers. I was interviewing developers. It was taking us about 25 interviews to find one person. Hmm. And we looked around the room and we said, you know, this is crazy. Why don't we just start building our own developers? And so we were putting it first started out with, hey, let's build a training program. And then we decided, let's just build a school. And that's really the genesis of Coder Foundry, because I talked to a lot of my other friends that own companies and they're in the same problem. They were asking me, like, how are you finding developers? You know, how do you do that? And I'm like, I have the same problem you do. And so we just started Coder Foundry. And then our first class sold out, and then we just went from there. And we're excited about it.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, you hear a lot of conversation about alternative education and how we can really prepare that IT workforce. So specifically with that, talk about the boot camp format. Who can attend this and who's really the best makeup for that student?
And so really our boot camp is geared towards people that know something about coding. So you can't come in what we call zero to hero. But if you know something about coding and you can pass our coding test to get in, we'll let you in. And that has ranged in a lot of ages. So there's people that are four-year CS graduates that had a hard time breaking into the industry. And then there's people that have been doing mainframe for the last 20 years. And technology has kind of passed them by, and they're trying to retool, retrain, and get back into some modern technologies.
Yeah. So in the same line, it's very similar in how we have new ways of education. People have online classes versus in-person classes. So, you know, how do the boot camps work specifically for you, and how long does it take? You know, what is that overall makeup?
Yeah, so when we bring in a boot camp every 12 weeks, so it takes 12 weeks to do it, and we have the same conversation with every class of students when we start out. And we say, even though you paid to be here, think of yourself as an employee now for Coder Foundry. And so they have deliverables every single week, and you have to put in a complete work day, which is pretty much 8 to 9 hours a day, 5 days a week. And so it's a full-time commitment, a full-time job. And what that does, it trains them, A, how to code, B, how to be an employee, and 3, how to meet deadlines, which is the 3 things that all developers need to have. You got to meet deadlines, and you got to know how to code, and you have to show up every day.
It's not just technical. It's the
right.
professional development
it's the professionals,
skills.
Yeah.
Very good. So we talked a little bit about this in our pre-interview prep about teaching .NET and, mm-hmm. and that being the primary language. Tell me how you came up with that curriculum. What made you choose that particular language?
Right. So .NET or C-sharp is from Microsoft. And pretty much still today in corporate America, that's the predominant platform people are using to develop. Yes, there's other platforms out there like Java, Ruby, and those types of things. But to give you the best chance at getting a job, and that's what we're all concerned about as student outcomes, mm-hmm. is we push them into what corporate America wants you to do, you know, which is right now it's currently C-sharp, JavaScript, and those types of technologies.
Yeah, you're hearing that a lot, mm-hmm. just job demand out there in general. So when you're talking to that student who maybe is just used to a four-year, they think about traditional college, four-year degree, how do you tell them it compares when it comes to your boot camp?
Right. So if a student comes to us and they're in the middle of their four-year degree, we would tell them to go finish it. If they're in the middle of their two-year degree, definitely finish that associate's degree if you're at a technical community college. How does it compare? Four-year CS graduates, it's a lot heavy on theory and a lot heavy on things that aren't related to coding. Mm. And so what we do is we teach you the hardcore skills about coding, which means that a lot of keyboard time, a lot of times where you're typing in actual physical programming, which they don't do that a lot in the four-year CS degree. And that's the hard, that's why it's hard for them to break into industry, because they basically have to sell themselves on being very smart and intelligent, which they are. But a lot of employers say, can you code tomorrow? Right. I need you to finish something tomorrow.
Yeah, you hear that a lot, is like most of these demands are for experienced programmers.
Right.
So how do you show that when you're in a boot camp there? So, well, that's great. And I know, again, selling it to a student, you always like to have these success stories. Mm-hmm. You got any particular one that you like to say?
Yeah, I won't use his name, but he came to us, and he was 26, and he'd been out of college for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And he was literally what we all think when we have stereotypes of kids that write software and things like that. He was literally living in mom's basement. He was literally that guy. She's cooking him mac and cheese at night.
Wow.
And he came to me early on in the class, and he just didn't believe that his life or fortunes could change. And we took him through 12 weeks. 12 weeks later, he got a job, and he came in my office, and literally he cried. He said, I can't believe someone's going to pay me to do this. Before, he was just, you know, playing Warcraft at home, yeah. You know. So, and now we put him in a job, and his job was, you know, right at $65,000. So if you can imagine going from zero income to that, I mean –
And more specifically, doing something they love. I mean,
doing something you like to do.
Passion, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's usually rare to be able to find that. So,
yeah.
Your last school's had a lot of success. Now you're expanding. So, mm-hmm. you've got an office school that's supposed to open up in Charlotte.
Yeah, we're opening in Charlotte in July the 7th. One of the things we had a problem with our tried location was housing. And in Charlotte, it gave us the opportunity to put a location that was in walking distance of like 10 or 12 housing options. And so students who were coming out of state, when we had 9 of 10 students coming out of state into our other school, we needed to have a way to give them housing, and Charlotte just gave us a great opportunity. If you know the Triad, it's a great place to live, yeah. but it's kind of a sprawl,
mm-hmm.
you know, whereas Charlotte's more compact.
Yeah.
So we're excited about it.
There seems to be a couple different metropolitan areas, kind of mm-hmm. the smaller cities that is Charlotte. So where exactly is it going to be located?
It's really close to UNC Charlotte,
okay.
University
yeah.
area. So it's really right across the street from UNCC.
Oh, that's a great location.
Yeah.
I think that would be really good. So people want to learn more about Coder Foundry, how to get plugged in, that type of thing. Where do you point them?
CoderFoundry.com.
That's easy
and
enough.
That's just go to the website there, and then from there you can hook to us with LinkedIn and Facebook and those kind of things.
Great. Bobby, thanks for your time.
No problem.
We're looking forward to hearing more about that Charlotte campus. I know that's some of the activities that we're even doing just this next week. Is part of our Knowledge Workforce Network is going to be covering just that. How are you dealing with millennials? How are you retraining the older generation? And we're also doing a Come Tech Out Charlotte job fair that'll be on Thursday. So we've got about 300 job seekers out there. They might be able to use some extra help there. So that'd be good. For those of you listening in, you are listening to NC Tech Talk, the tech sector's internet radio show brought to you by the North Carolina Technology Association. If you ever want to learn more about us, you can visit our website at nctechnology.org. Our Twitter handle is at NCTA, and we have a company page on LinkedIn. All of our updates and comments about this show are going to be at hashtag NCTechTalk. So now we're going to visit with our next guest, who you met earlier in the show. Lynn Yanyo is the CEO of Tiger Eye Security Sensors, who, as I mentioned earlier in the show, won Best Presentation at the Startup Showcase. So Lynn, those presentations were only about 6 minutes, so you had to squeeze it into a very little amount of time. Take us through just an overview of your organization, how you got started.
Sure. So I joined Tiger Eye Sensor as it was founded about a year ago. Our founder, CJ Scarlett, has been working on this idea for about 2.5 years. She personally has a background in criminal justice, and she worked for the North Carolina Association. But she is also a person who has suffered 2 assaults in her life.
Oh, wow.
And so she personally has a feeling about what it's like to have to overcome that. And for people that have been assaulted, it can sometimes take years to get over it. So her goal is to eliminate the need for people to recover from assault by preventing it in the first place. And that's the idea behind this device.
That's a great concept there. So what about your background? How did you fit into it? And what about the rest of your team? How does it apply to Tiger Eye?
Sure. So I spent about 30 years. I look a lot younger than on the radio than you could tell. But I started off as an engineer, and I got a PhD in material science. And then I worked for a company for 15 years inventing things. So I have a bunch of patents. My frustration at that point was I was inventing really interesting stuff, and it was going on the shelf because we weren't able to sell it. So I moved to the other side, and sometimes called the dark side when you're a tech person, and started talking to engineers at other companies about what they wanted and designing stuff for them. Eventually moved into marketing, and I ran a couple of businesses for that company. One was in automotive, another was in an aerospace segment, and one of the last ones was in electronics, where I got traveled all over Asia and learned a lot about the electronics business.
Wow.
Which kind of helped me here support this business.
So how big is your company right now? Who are some of your other contributors or some of the main expertise that you have?
Well, we're kind of virtual, as startups can go with not a lot of funding, but we've been able to build teams with other people who are very good in this segment. So between CJ and I, we went looking for an engineering firm that could help us with all of the design work. And after evaluating 6 or 7 of them all over the country, we actually chose a firm that's based in Sunnyvale, California, as well as Ontario, Canada. Nuvation has 16 years of experience in designing devices like the one I'll describe to you. And fortunately, they were a supplier to BlackBerry, so they had some engineering talent that was not as well used in the very recent time. We were able to put them to good use, and they are now a member of us. And Michael Worry, who is their CEO, is also our chief commercialization officer.
Oh, that's great.
And in addition, we've just had an addition to our CFO, and our CFO is Robert Ross, who also runs a consulting company that does just business plans and fractional consulting for financial and legal. So that brings us some support.
Yeah, that sounds like a great development, good foundational leadership for your group. So you brought in a example of the device today. And so when you first started, and you kind of referenced this earlier, what was the problem you wanted to solve? What was that need that you saw out there that this that your sensor really would help?
So the very first need, and then we'll all articulate some other things that we've learned about it, is that there's an assault every 26 seconds in the United States. There's 1.2 million assaults, and those are the ones that are reported. I'm sure we can all think of the ones in the news now where we realize that people don't report certain assaults, particularly if they know the assailant. So the goal was to reduce that number tremendously. And a large portion of that, when you think about it, are women that... we tend to experience the world a little differently than men. We know that most men don't think a lot about where they park their car. And we actually spend a lot of time thinking about where we're going to put that car so that when we come back out, we feel safe walking to it. Or we do interesting things like call a friend while we're walking to our car. Not that that would necessarily help us. It just makes us feel better. And so this makes us a bit different when we go to designing a device, because CJ and I, both women, think about how the solution would be different for us than someone who might have more physical skill or more ability to run fast. CJ and I no longer run fast, and we're not very strong, but yet we want to feel safe.
Absolutely. And I mean, this always sounded like something that should have been done years ago. So why hasn't anybody done this before? Or what brought this here that really is original there?
So I think 5 years ago, it would not have been possible to create the device that we're looking at now. It's the miniaturization of technology and the improvement in battery life that allows us to make this device. Our device was designed with the idea that if I wear a silk blouse and I pin it to my blouse, it can't make the blouse look like it's been pulled, and it can't damage the device. So it has to be really light and small. So it's 1 square inch in shape. It's a square, and it's about the thickness of 2 quarters, and it weighs about as much, about 11 grams. Which for our engineers that were working on this was a large constraint to put all the technology that we have in it in there.
Yeah. So very innovative product, but obviously the question everybody always asks is, how are you going to monetize it? You know, tell us how people can purchase the product, how much it costs, and how you plan on making money.
So let's talk a little bit about how this works. There are lots of products out there to help protect you. You can carry mace, or you can have your phone in a phone app. But our goal is to give you a device that doesn't need for you to be physically able to activate it. So it activates with your voice. And in doing so, when I activate it with my voice, which I have around for me, regardless of what my hands are trying to do to protect myself, we want you to be able to get help. And so we can't just have you call a friend or family member. That won't bring you help. Mm-hmm. So we have you call a monitoring company. So if you think about home monitoring, and we can list several names of companies that I'll just give them credit, mm-hmm. right? AlarmForce, yeah. ADT, Monitronics. Those folks are well prepared to be able to understand what your need is and then bring you the right help, because they've been doing that for years and years and years in home monitoring. Why you can't take your home monitoring with you is your question, right? Why can I not have that? Well, now you can. But it's important that we have that monitoring agent that's there to talk to you, because your 911 operator can't do the same thing they can do, unfortunately. In the world of 911, they can't take a GPS location and figure out what that is. Mm-hmm. They just don't have the ability to take that. They can't take an image that we might send them, which is a picture of the assailant, and do anything with it. They can't do anything with the recording. So we use the monitoring company as that interface that gives you the right support that you need. So when you buy this device, you'll buy it from a monitoring company. You can get it from your ADT folks, or you'll get it from someone else who might be selling it with monitoring, and you'll pay a fee. It'll look like your phone bill, right? So when I go get a phone, I might get my phone for free, and then I have a 3-year contract.
Just get an add-on.
Yeah, or maybe I'll have to pay for the phone, and then I'll only have to pay a monthly fee, either way. So that will be how it works.
Yeah. You had referenced you had some patents over your career, and do you have any IP on this device, and how has that been structured as you developed it?
Yes, we do. So a big part of this is the voice recognition component. So there are no other devices that have tried to use that. And again, we feel that that's really key to your safety, is your hands are going to be defending yourself. So you have your voice to be able to activate that. So our key patent references the fact that we have a wearable device for safety that is voice activated. We've also done a lot of work in voice recognition, because we're not trying to identify you by your voice. So it's not voice ID. Mm-hmm. And it's also not voice recognition like Siri, so I know exactly what you said. It's really the emotional state. If you are afraid and yelling a word, that's more important for us to know than exactly what word you're yelling, because we know that you need help then.
Yeah. Interesting. So we'll probably end up seeing this product as security companies start to take it on and adopt it. But how does our audience learn more about your product?
So you can go to our website, which is TaggerEyeSensor.com, and you'll see things there. We've had great coverage about this, and we had a great response at NCIDA as well. Cool. I find that when we do pitch competitions, we usually have a series of judges, and we do well, but it was really, really gratifying to see a large group of people all voting and realizing they all wanted the device. It was very, very gratifying.
Yeah, I think that's always been a good thing, of just kind of seeing the community that comes together and supporting those types of companies. So we were real pleased again about it, and so we thank you for being a part of that as well. Lynn, Bobby, both enjoyed the conversation a lot. Again, I really appreciate you joining the show, and look forward to hearing more about it. We talked a lot about state of technology during the show, but before we go, I want to tell you more about our next upcoming signature event. It will be a dual event at the Grandover Resort in Greensboro on August 13th and 14th. First, we take over the east course of the Grandover Resort and bring about 130 of our golfing members out for a good old-fashioned golf tournament. The golf is great, and we've identified more and more CIOs to join the tournament as well, so they'll be involved in a hosting committee. You can either sponsor and field a team yourself, or you can sponsor one of the CIOs and play with them. So it brings a good opportunity to connect with some of the IT leaders in the area. After the golf tournament ends, we will kick off the leadership retreat, which is our executive retreat hosted by our board leadership. The format includes some great content and ample time to have great conversations outside of that. We have some great keynote discussions, including Sim Sitkin, who is the founding faculty director at Coach K's Center of Leadership and Ethics, who will kick off our dinner. State Treasurer Janet Cowell will then open up Friday's agenda with a talk on the NC Innovation Fund. And then we'll wrap up the day with a mid-year economic forecast from Mark Vintner, who is a senior economist for Wells Fargo. If you want to learn more about the event specifically, you can visit either nctagolf.com for the golf tournament and nctaleadership.com for the leadership retreat. That concludes our show. We will have the podcast available on our website, so visit nctechnology.org for this and all of our future events and engagement. Again, don't forget to follow us on Twitter at NCTA or on LinkedIn. Our next show is going to be on July 27th, so we hope to see you again. Bobby, Lynn, thank you again
thank you.
For being on the show. We really enjoyed having both of you.
Thank you so much.
Yep. You all have a great day.